It's 2:07 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios, and it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, at this point, it looks like even the LA Times has had it with George Gascon.
Uh-oh.
Kind of.
What did they say?
They wrote about all of his scandals and didn't start criticizing the recall campaign for 7 paragraphs.
Ooh. Maybe that friend is becoming a foe. Time will tell. 800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. He is a pollster and the founder and senior partner of Zogby Strategies. John Zogby, welcome.
Hi, John. Good to talk to you again.
Likewise. Thanks so much for stopping by. So the big story today, obviously, is the Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe versus Wade. People are reacting to it in real time based on what they think about the ruling, how they feel about abortion, all of those things. But as we get closer to the November election, people are going to start thinking about it in more of a political context. How do you see this issue playing out politically?
Well, you know, the issue of abortion has always played itself in a strong fashion whenever there has been a moment to cause intensity, higher intensity, one side or the other. And so we've seen that in the 1970s. Roe v. Wade gave birth to the right to life movement. And in the late 90s, it was the attack and assassination of an OBGYN in upstate New York that motivated pro-choice folks. I think on this one, pro-choice folks really get motivated, including those who are disenchanted with the Democrats, disenchanted with President Biden. I think what you're going to do is see a heightened voter turnout. Whether it's enough or not is another story. But a heightened voter turnout and enthusiasm to vote on the part of Democrats.
If that's the way that people who feel strongly about abortion are going to react to this, what about the swing voters? What about the moderates? What about the people that jump from side to side who are very upset right now about inflation, about gas prices, maybe about the border, other subjects?
Boy, John, it's the suburban voters we've got to watch this year, because suburban women obviously are going to pay very close attention to this Supreme Court decision and its impact on themselves, on their daughters. At the same time, it's these very suburban women who are also pretty intense about education, what's taught in schools, critical race theory, and so on. I think those are two non-inflation but highly intense issues that could move voters one way or another. My hunch tells me this is really historic, overturning of Roe v. Wade, something which, you know, the ability to the right to choose has become not only a majority but also kind of an assumption in our country. See that overturned, I think, is tectonic. But on the other hand, social and emotional learning, parents' roles and what's taught in schools, that's going to play its hand as well.
One of the things that happens in politics is that the political coalitions are always evolving. They're always changing. Different groups are added to coalitions and other groups break off and become part of a different coalition. We certainly saw that with the New Deal coalition when Southern whites were a huge part of the reason that FDR was able to win 4 presidential elections. And those voters are largely gone and have been gone for some time. Historically, whenever you talk about the swing voters or the voters that are tacit Republicans, sometimes they vote, sometimes they don't, strongly pro-choice Republican women, Rockefeller Republicans, however you want to call them, if you go back to the 90s and the 80s and even before that, they would certainly qualify. But many of those people have abandoned the Republican Party altogether, and they are now not just Democrats, but they are reliable partisan Democrats. And parts of the Democratic coalition, pro-life, blue-collar whites who are populist with their economic beliefs, but certainly socially conservative. They voted for people like Bill Clinton. Let's not forget Bill Clinton won states like Arkansas and Tennessee and Kentucky and places like that. Those people have now become part of the Republican coalition, and they are comfortable with the pro-life position. They're comfortable with this decision.
Yeah.
Does that play a role in this, that the elements of each side that would have had a problem with where their party stands on abortion, they've now just switched sides altogether so you don't have the voices of dissent in each party that you would have in the past?
You know, seriously, you have just, in that those few sentences, helped to define what makes my life so interesting as a pollster, you know, finding these realignments that are taking place. At the same time, let me add, there is a real dynamic among Latinos, isn't there? You know, normally 65-67% vote Democrat. Now we're seeing almost an even split, Democrat-Republican among Latinos. We're seeing up to the potentially 20% of younger African-American men voting Republican as well. I think there's a lot of changes taking place, and they're especially maybe not so vital in a state like California, certainly not New York, but they, you know, certainly can play a huge role in Georgia, in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, that can change the tenor and the results of a presidential race. And so there's a lot of movement going on under our feet politically.
To that point, the Republicans are trying to win as many seats as they possibly can in the House, and there's really no way of getting to a clear majority, a governing majority, without picking up seats in places like New York, New Jersey, California, maybe even Connecticut, New Hampshire, Maine. How much does this hurt Republican chances at picking up seats in deeply blue states that might have pockets of purple or pockets of red?
Yeah, and it's important to boil it down to congressional districts and to the work of reapportionment or gerrymandering or whatever you want to call it. I know I was in New York, upstate New York. Democrats tried to slam through a really highly partisan, overly partisan set of districts, and an expert was brought in to change that. However, some of the districts now that are have been seen as leaning Republican, they could change. This decision today, it's really too soon to tell, but I do suspect that you're going to see some districts that were maybe not considered to be terribly competitive, becoming competitive all over again. So I'm not ready to bet on anything in November.
Is it possible for Democrats in deeply blue states to overplay their hand of cards, assuming that this is an issue that cuts their way? I say that because here in California, Democrats in Sacramento want to put an initiative on the ballot this November to motivate their people to come out and vote that would essentially liberalize abortion without hardly any regulations at all the way up until late-term abortion. And you say to yourself, okay, that might play well on the coast, but if they're already having problems with Latinos, that may be one bridge too far.
John, the potential for both parties to overplay their hand is considerable. But we're talking Democrats right now, sure. And you've got not only an internal split among Democrats between, say, you know, moderate New Deal Democrats versus the progressive Democrats, but you've got a split between progressive Democrats, those who are called lumpers and those who are called I can't remember what the term is, but in other words, those who see a progressive socialist ideology on everything, and those who want to select issues one at a time, and they're actually battling each other and almost coming to blows with each other. But look, anything that is going to be seen as horribly one-sided by either party runs the risk of losing those swing voters that we were talking about earlier. Absolutely.
How bad would it be for Democrats if truly ugly things happen this weekend at places like churches or pro-life offices, those sorts of places?
Ugly doesn't help, does it? No. No. That would be devastating. Democrats could make the case that this was enormous. It was monumental. This could hurt the lives of women, particularly younger women. This could be very meaningful. But to detract from that message by overplaying their hand or rioting in the streets, I don't see it helping. Not at all. It also could alienate Black and Latino voters who traditionally have been very pro-Democrat, but who are, you know, not always supportive of the social issues like this.
We're speaking with John Zogby, pollster and founder and senior partner of Zogby Strategies. John, whenever you talk about some subjects, it seems like people are on one side or the other. It's black or white, red or blue. You're with me or you're with them. On abortion, however, when you talk to people about it, most people fall somewhere in the middle. Now, you may side with one group more on more issues than others, but very few people, at least the ones that I talk to about it, take a truly extreme position on either side. Is that what you're finding reflective in the polls?
I have been looking at that very closely for 30-plus years. And it's an issue that lends itself to what I call conflicting values. I mean, you could have 57-58% of voters say, I believe terminating a fetus is tantamount to manslaughter. And yet 57-58% say that I believe a woman has a right to choose. Now, are they stupid? Are they fickle? Absolutely not. There are people who fall into both categories who think abortion is horrible. And it is. Terminating the fetus is manslaughter, yet I can't make that decision for a woman. That's between her and her physician and her God. And so for the most part, people fall in the category of somewhat supportive of abortion, somewhat opposed to abortion. It's still about 19-20% who are on the strongly support, strongly opposed.
You know, it's interesting. Whenever there's a story that dominates the news, in that particular moment, it seems like the biggest thing in the world, and it seems like it's going to be the issue that defines how people vote in the election. Certainly when the war broke out in Ukraine, all of the attention, all the focus was on that. And now it seems like that started 50 million years ago, and it's just something that's a memory and not something that's still currently playing itself out over on the other side of the globe. A week from now, 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now, do you think the same thing is going to happen with abortion, where it's going to feel like that happened a million years ago? Or is this going to be a subject that continues to dominate headlines and dominate conversations?
Because it's an organizing issue. It's an issue where both sides are highly organized. Both sides can highly mobilize. This is an issue that, and it's also monumental. This was not a decision by the court that is to be parsed. Well, what do you suppose they meant by this? What do you suppose they meant by that? This was clear and unequivocal and 6-3. And so in that sense, I think this issue is going to be with us right through Election Day.
You know, here in California, we just had an election that had very low turnout across the board for Republicans, Democrats, independents, minor party voters. And I got a lot of emails from Republican voters in California who follow politics very closely, but they don't fill their ballot out. They don't send it in. And they say, what's the point? Republicans in California are going to lose every election. Every time we get excited about something, we think we might win and we end up losing. And I'm just depressed and I am hopeless. And I don't think that Republicans are going to ever win anything ever again in the state of California. Let's take that mentality and look at what's going on in Washington right now. Democrats control the White House. They control both houses of Congress. And their side, their voters, have just experienced loss after loss after loss, whether it's Build Back Better or the voting rights legislation or guns in front of the court or schools in front of the court.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Or abortion in front of the court, the gubernatorial election in Virginia, the special election in Texas. Every time they look at polls, they're depressed. Do you believe that there's going to be a certain amount of the same attitudes that Republicans in California have for Democrats nationally, where they just say, hey, our team can't organize a one-car funeral. Why the hell should we trust them this November to try to fix this mess?
I think we were clearly heading in that direction, but I think today is the sort of issue, like I said, that can be an organizing issue and that can actually mobilize voters. This can be, I don't want to use the word spin, but this can be turned into a powerful organizational tool. By the same token, one side has to have some sort of moral imperative that appeals to swing voters. And Republicans still, it's incumbent upon them to be able to show that they really have a plan to make this better. I mean, you know, by January 2nd of 2023, Republicans are going to own inflation. They're going to own Ukraine. They're going to own all of these issues. What's their plan as they go forward? And so in that sense, honestly, all bets are off. I wouldn't call any kind of landslide one way or another.
Last question before you go. California's senior senator Dianne Feinstein has been beaten up with hit piece after hit piece, questioning whether or not she's mentally capable of performing the duties of a United States senator. And the straw that broke the camel's back that really started all of these negative pieces written about her was her performance in the confirmation process of Amy Coney Barrett when she was nominated to be on the United States Supreme Court. Democrats thought that she wasn't aggressive enough at trying to block that nomination. And ultimately, of course, she was confirmed by the Senate and put on the court. If Joe Biden is not seen as someone who's mentally capable of really launching the Democratic attacks on this ruling, could you see the same fate for him where the party turns on him and says, wait a minute, we have this man in office who is feeble and not capable of fighting the way we want him to fight, and maybe it's time for him to face a primary challenge?
There is the potential for that to happen. I'm not sure, honestly, whether we're there yet or not, but one would hope that somebody like Biden would not be Warren Spahn in this kind of situation. For those who don't know, great, one of the greatest left-handed pitchers of all time, who at the age of 46, 47 would say, I can still pitch, and ended up in the Class D minor leagues getting shelled by 17-year-olds. He couldn't pitch anymore.
If you're 47 and you want to pitch in the major leagues, you better know how to throw a knuckleball.
You better know how to throw a knuckleball, yeah. I got to assume that Joe will know.
One more point on that. My old partner on the radio, Jillian Barbary, was married to Brett Barbary of the Florida Marlins. And Charlie Huff threw the first game in Florida Marlins history. And Jillian was there for it, and she was in the locker room after the game. And Charlie Huff, who had to be mid-40s at the time, gray hair, was on the exercise bike smoking a cigarette after the game while he was on the exercise bike. I just thought, now that's athletics.
Yeah, that's a good one, John.
John Zogby, pollster and founder and senior partner of Zogby Strategies. Thanks so much for stopping by. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
And now it's time to take a look at the roads. It's the John Phillips Show on Talk Radio 790 KABC on this Jimmy Buffett Friday. Well, we've been spending a lot of time on this show talking about the many shortcomings of the district attorney here in Los Angeles, George Gascon. And every day, it's like the antithesis of Christmas morning, where you wake up and you get more bad news from George Gascon of him screwing something else up that generally results in someone being murdered or maimed, which is why we're trying to recall George Gascon from office. The effort to collect signatures is going on right now and really reaching a critical moment in time. It's do or die for those of us who want law and order to come back to Los Angeles County. Joining us to talk about this is a San Francisco-based political commentator and founder of the San Francisco DA Recall Chase Boudin movement, who is now loaning his expertise to those of us here in Southern California to try to get George Gascon out of office. Richie Greenberg, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing me on today, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Likewise, how optimistic are you that George Gascon is going to be kicked to the curb and law and order will be brought back to Los Angeles County?
Well, you know, if we can do it in a city as far left, ultra left wing as San Francisco, we can do it as well down here in LA. I am very confident. I'm looking at the numbers. I'm looking at the sentiment. I'm looking at a few factors that are playing into the recall success here in LA compared to San Francisco. And I am seeing very, very good promise here, especially since you have across L.A. County so many city councils that have taken a stance of no confidence against the DA, and the DA's office itself have the majority saying that they're going to support a recall as well. We didn't have that luxury in San Francisco. So I'm seeing here in L.A. the chances are going to be even greater with a greater margin of victory.
What would you say of all of the things that you guys did up in San Francisco to kick Chase Boudin out of office? What was the most effective part of your strategy in doing that?
Well, you know, the way that I had presented it when I was interviewed on numerous media, TV, radio, magazines, is that Boudin earned it himself because of his radical agenda, because of his...
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamin's podcast wherever you listen.
Non-prosecutorial agenda, and history played out over the months, over the year and a half or so that the recall was waiting to get up to election day. Each of the unfortunate tragedies that happened, which we see here in Los Angeles, I'm actually down in LA right now visiting. We see here in LA there are parallels. There are uncanny, chilling parallels between what's happened in L.A. under Gascon and Bodine in San Francisco. So, Gascon, the moment he opens his mouth, is making the case for his own recall. But, you know, we don't want any more tragedies. We don't want any more shootings. We don't want any more deaths. But we can't really control that. But that is one of the major factors. And we didn't even have to do anything, Gascon or Bodine themselves, with their policies, buried themselves.
When I looked at the results of that election, that recall election up in San Francisco, of all of the racial groups in San Francisco, the one that voted in the largest numbers to kick him out of office were Asians. Did that surprise you that Asians were the most motivated group to come and vote to kick Chesa Boudin out of office?
No, that was no surprise whatsoever. We knew that, you know, in San Francisco is a very small town, believe it or not. We are only 7 miles wide, 7 miles north-south. We have close to 40-something percent are Asian, Chinese. A lot of people don't realize that. So they are the largest ethnic group that votes. And because of what we had seen over the past few years with the very unfortunate anti-Asian hate crimes, attacks, and a few even died, this was no surprise whatsoever. But what was really unfortunate also is that we had to endure not only the Asian community, but the recall effort in general was this rhetoric coming out of Chesa Boudin's mouth saying that we were racist, we backing his recall were anti-Asian, anti-Chinese, which couldn't have been any more further from the truth at all. And it bears that right there, looking at the results, that it was the Asian community that voted him out overwhelmingly. So his rhetoric was proved completely, completely false.
We're speaking with Richie Greenberg, who is part of the effort to recall DA George Gascon from office. If you want to sign the petition, you can get it online at recalldageorgegascon.com. Print it out. You can sign it. You can send it in. Have it postmarked by today. All of you registered voters here in Los Angeles County also got one in your mail, so you can just fill that out and put it in the mailbox and send it in if you haven't already done so. We tragically had two El Monte police officers murdered in cold blood as a direct result of one of George Gascon's failed policies that prevented putting a career criminal in jail where he wouldn't be able to kill two police officers. Instead, Gascon's policy was in effect. The individual was not in jail. He was on the streets, and that allowed him to murder two officers. Gascon is doubling and tripling down on defending his special directives. And when he had a press conference to try to, quote, get the facts out there, he was asked by Fox News' Matt Finn if he had a message for the family members of the dead officers. And Boudin just shut his mouth and walked out of the room, wouldn't acknowledge the question, wouldn't provide an answer. This guy, to me, is the most tone-deaf politician in the entire state of California to not recognize how offensive that is and how bad that looks. Did you have the same reaction that I did when Gascon rudely did that at the press conference?
Yes, I think you said Bodine inadvertently before.
Sorry.
But yeah, it was
Gascon. They're like Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
I know, exactly. And again, as I was saying, the parallels between Bodine and Gascon and what's happened in San Francisco up there and down here in L.A. are just uncanny. And yeah, I sat back listening to his press conference. I replayed it, reviewed it, and both Bodine and Gascon, same thing. They feel virtually no remorse, no tears, no siding with the victims. They don't really see victims as being the problem, that the perpetrators of crime, the criminals, are the victims in their mind. And it's just disgusting. It's appalling. And again, a parallel that we had up in San Francisco was a parolee out in a stolen vehicle with a gun and drugs, drunk in San Francisco. Troy McAllister lost control of his vehicle, crashed and killed two innocent women on the street. back on New Year's Eve 2020-2021. That's what was the motivation for us to begin the recall up there. You see, so we have a similar idea where you have victims are killed, either shot or hit with a car, that are just in there. They're adding to this outrage. They're adding to the public sentiment that having people, these rogue DAs, if you can even call them DAs, they're not acting as DAs at all. They're acting as defense attorneys. DA doesn't mean defense attorney, right? They're supposed to be prosecuting, holding criminals accountable. Those who have been out on parole and violate their parole are supposed to be brought back in again to face the music, and it is not happening. And we see over and over again, there have been and there are going to be, unfortunately, more and more incidents that are just going to add to the flames, fuel to the flame that we see here in Los Angeles, to give more reason, more percentage, once the recall goes through, to want to get this guy out.
As someone who has participated in both the recall of Chase Boudin and the ongoing effort to recall George Gascon here in Los Angeles, what message would you give to the people of other counties here in California, of Riverside, San Bernardino, Orange, Ventura, Kern, where certainly George Soros will try to expand his reach and go into those counties and try to win those DA's offices and do the same thing that he did in L.A. and San Francisco?
Well, there's a couple of things to bear in mind. First of all, we really, really need to be thankful that here in California we have a recall mechanism at all. You know, you have out in New York, Alvin Bragg, another one of these rogue DAs, who they can't recall them there. They don't have it. It's not on the books. So here in California, we can do this. So we should be thankful for that. But, you know, we have to ensure that voters understand who it is that is running for office. What are their experiences? What is the credentials? Are they someone like up in San Francisco with Boudin, who came out of nowhere, who has no experience in a DA's office? Once a candidate declares their candidacy, their intent to run for DA in these other cities and these other counties around California, and they say, they state proudly that I am a lifelong public defender. I have experience in defending. That should automatically disqualify them if they have never ever worked in a DA's office before, if they have never held a criminal accountable, if they've never gone through a trial, won a conviction, and secured prison time or other meaningful restitution or accountability, then they should never be qualified. They should never be considered a viable candidate for being considered for the DA's office. That is the most important thing that we should. And then, you know, Soros, not every race is being funded by Soros or his PACs, but in general, if it's a Soros-backed DA candidate, if it's a candidate that has zero experience running for a DA, they should never be considered as a real a candidate. This would be like having someone from the morgue now saying, I am going to be the chief surgeon in the hospital. You can't do this. You can't have a baggage handler saying, I'm now going to fly the plane.
Run for the hills. Richie Greenberg, exactly. If people want to find you online, how can they do that?
Okay, well, for me, I am very visible online. You could just Google my name, Richie Greenberg, and it will take you to my appearances, and you'll also find my website. But I'm at greenbergnation.com. So you could go to Greenberg Nation, that's all E's, G-R-E-E-N-B-E-R-G, nation.com. You can learn more about me. There's links to the recall DA Gascon as well. So you can go all there right to my website.
Okay? Richie Greenberg, have a wonderful weekend. Thanks so much for stopping by.
It's my pleasure to speak with you and all of Los Angeles. Thank you for having me here.
It's the John Phillips Show, and right now it's time to take a look at the roads.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.